Hi, I'm Sanjay, and I'm a serial entrepreneur for the kicks, and I also invest in startups.
And I'm Shannon, a recent college grad working on building my first company.
And this is Startup Days,
the show where we take a behind-the-lens look at starting and growing a company from the perspective of founders and investors. On today's episode, Sanjay chats with longtime friend Arun Mohan. Arun is a physician executive, entrepreneur, and angel investor with a passion for improving healthcare delivery. Currently, he serves as co-founder and CEO of Radix Health, a technology company that partners with leading medical groups to improve patient access. Arun also founded PictureRx, which was acquired in 2014 by Bioscape Digital. Without further ado, here's Sanjay and Arun.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's a beautiful space you got here.
Thanks a lot. It's been fun having this space and being able to record here. We're at Prototype Prime, by the way. And it's a relatively nice day today, so I appreciate you making the trek in and
talking about
stuff.
Relative to yesterday, anything is nice. Yesterday was, 15 degrees?
15 degrees, yeah. Yeah, you're probably listening to this at a point that's way far away from when we recorded it, but it's been cold. We're in January 2018 right now while we record this.
Yeah, I actually flew to Hartford, Connecticut yesterday for a pitch, and it was warmer in Hartford than it was here.
Wow. And I've been to Hartford, Connecticut. I was actually one of the first places I went to after I went started working after college. There's not a lot to do there in Hartford, Connecticut, is there?
Yeah. And with the Aetna deal, probably less in the next couple of months or years. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about you. Let's talk about your background. Born and raised where?
It's born in Chicago, raised in Monroe, Georgia, about an hour east of here.
Monroe, Georgia. I know nothing about Monroe, Georgia.
So it's on Highway 78, right between Atlanta and Athens.
Okay.
So before 316 was built, 20 years ago, that was the only way of actually getting from Atlanta to Athens. And
okay.
So, on Georgia football Saturdays, you'd be, traffic backed up, for miles.
Yeah.
And now it's, it's a sleepy kind of suburban commuter town.
So it's small town.
Small town, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it like growing up there?
It's a cool place. We were one of the very few Indian families there.
So I was going to ask that. I got to imagine there weren't many of you.
No, we were very few. There was another, my dad is a GI doctor, so he moved there probably in the early 80s.
Okay. GI as in gastrointestinal.
Exactly.
Government issue, not working for the Army.
No,
okay.
Not for the Army. So he moved here from India back in the early, maybe mid 70s.
Okay.
Did his training in Chicago, which he was where I was born.
He was a relative latecomer then, compared, my parents came in the 60s.
They were probably part of the first wave.
Yeah,
exactly. So these, he came sort of that second wave of folks.
Yeah,
and then eventually got what the government issues what's called a J-1 visa.
Yep,
which allows you to come here, but you have to work in an underserved part of the country. So he ended up working with the Veterans Affairs Administration at the VA hospital down in Dublin, Georgia. So we moved there for a couple of years. My brother was born. Eventually moved up to Lawrenceville, so actually very close to here.
Okay,
and then a little bit further east after that to Monroe.
Okay. But originally he moved to Chicago. Obviously, that's where you were born. So you're the eldest of all the kids.
It's two of us. So I'm 2 years older than my brother.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Nice. And then your brother was born down here in Georgia.
He was born in Dublin. He's a Georgia boy.
Okay. So you know it's interesting. So we've got a very similar background, right? You're a first generation American. So am I. So what was that like growing up in Georgia, being a first year? I was born and raised in Kentucky.
Wow.
So
yeah.
A little bit different, maybe, than you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, we always felt accepted, always felt like we were part of the community. My dad was a doctor there, obviously. And so, a lot of people would know that we were Dr. Mohan's son and kids and, got treated with a certain amount of respect. But at the same time, we were also obviously very different. We were, like I said, one of the very few Indian families. It's a largely black, white town, largely Christian. We're not. So we definitely stuck out. But at the same time, it was a pretty welcoming place.
Yeah. So was it hard for you to ever get in trouble because everybody knew who you were, so you'd always get told on?
And... Yeah, I get told on, but I got held to kind of a set of expectations.
Yeah.
From both my parents as well as the community. And you know, sometimes we got off easy. I remember we were my mom got pulled over once for speeding, and the police officer pulled her over, looked at her, and said, "Oh, you're Dr. Mohan's wife," and you know, didn't let her off. You know, so
some benefits to being related to the only doctor in town.
That's exactly right.
Well, that's cool. So kind of keeping in ties back to India. Speak any languages, Indian languages?
You know,
at all?
I understand a language called Telugu, which is what is our mother tongue.
Right,
what we speak in the house, and but I don't speak much of it. I understand it pretty well.
Yeah,
very hard time speaking it.
Yeah, it's that grasp of vocabulary, right? That's the difficult thing, like coming up with that word.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
I
have that same problem. We're Gujarati, and I can understand it completely, but it's just fluently speaking. And I don't know if it's a matter of practice or it's something else.
I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, if we go back there for a month, say,
yeah,
I'll pick it up. I'm not fluent, but I can pick it up pretty well.
Yeah.
But, you know, not having been there in the last 7 years.
It's, right.
Yeah.
So what about, you've got kids too, right?
We've got two little girls, ages 7 or 8 and 5.
Yeah. And so have you taught them any Telugu or?
No.
No, not at all?
Not very, very, very little.
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife is not of Indian descent. And
right.
So, you know, we speak English in the house. We have a babysitter nanny who is Chilean. So they speak a
Spanish.
Lot of Spanish in the house.
Yeah.
I actually speak much better Spanish than I do Telugu. So
wow.
It's, you know.
Yeah. So you know, the fact that your wife is an Indian actually is not even the hurdle. Like, my wife is Indian and we speak English. And I don't know what it is. It's just like we met in college and always spoke English.
Is she Gujarati too?
She's Gujarati and she's also first generation American.
Oh, so you've got no excuse.
Yeah. I mean, really. and truth be told, her Gujarati is a lot better. She actually has gone through Hindi class with the kids.
Wow.
So they all speak Hindi and my Hindi's atrocious.
Good for them.
I basically can't speak it. So anyway, so you born and raised essentially here in Georgia, went to school, and then we met at a point. I was trying to think back. So we actually met through Outstanding Atlanta.
That's right.
That year that we both got that award. And then we happened to cross paths. We've crossed paths so many times. It's so funny.
Yeah, really.
I was thinking about it. So we went to business school together at Emory, mm-hmm. While you were also in med school at the same time,
That's
right?
Exactly
med school
right.
and business
yep.
school. You were doing the joint degree. And then Leadership Atlanta we did together. unbeknownst to one another, right? Like
yeah.
You and I didn't talk about the fact
no.
that we were both in
there
the running for that.
There were long gaps between these things. So, you know, we met each other through Outstanding Atlanta, and there was like a long gap until business school.
Right.
And, you know. But then somehow,
Our paths crossed a little bit, right? Because you were doing a startup in business school slash
right.
med school, right?
That's right.
Talk about that. What were you doing there?
So we started this company called PictureRx, and so there's a big problem in the United States where taking medications is pretty hard. It's hard to keep up with them, hard to understand what you're supposed to take, how to take them. And so we had software that would go into a pharmacy management system and would pull out instructions for how to take a medicine. And it would convert those instructions into really simple to read illustrations, pictures,
right.
pictorials. And then we would print it out and give it to patients.
Cool.
Yeah.
So what happened?
So we ended up raising, you know, we had a pretty robust or brisk business in what's called SBIR grants, so
yep.
Small Business Innovations and Research Grants. So raised a couple
of
million.
So that's free money from the government.
Free money from the government. And so it allowed us to develop, test, start to commercialize some of the products.
Yeah.
Ended up selling it to the company to a company here in town called Bioscape Digital.
Okay.
So Bioscape was actually started by another Emory Business School guy named Stuart Bracken. And so they have a business where they go into hospitals, emergency departments,
right.
and they'll put tablets in the patient's rooms. And so he said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if in one of these tablets you could pull up your medications and all the instructions for how to take them and go through the process of even doing a medication history all in the tablet? And we said, yeah, that sounds like a pretty good synergy. So he was really building a business. We were building more of an R&D shop.
Right.
And so it was a nice fit. And, you know, we ended up selling to him back in 2014.
So all money that was into the company was all grant money? Did you ever have outside investors?
We had some angel investors early
okay.
on who were actually co-founders in the business.
Okay.
But nothing else.
So good exit. Everybody was happy?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it wasn't.
That's good.
I haven't retired and
right.
certainly am not living on an island anywhere. But but it's, yeah. It was a good exit. I think we learned a lot of lessons along the way about what it takes to build a business. It was certainly my first foray into entrepreneurship.
Right. I think that's what I always say. That's the most interesting thing is that you learn a lot by just doing it, right?
Yes.
You can read all these books about entrepreneurship and startups, but there's nothing like actually doing it yourself.
No, it's a lot like building anything, frankly. I mean, you know, you build technology or a house. I mean, you can architect this thing all day long and you
right.
can have all the most amazing plans. But until you get there and actually start putting nail to hammer and wood together, I mean, it's a completely different exercise.
What was the one hardest thing about doing that first startup? Like, what was the one thing that was just like, oh man?
I think for me, it was balancing things. So, you know, I was in the middle of medical school and business school. It was not a full-time gig. And that's a regret that I have. You know, what would it look like if I had done this full-time, you know, as opposed to this part-time thing?
Do you think you could have made it bigger, maybe not sold?
I think so. I think, I think when you're 100% invested in something, you know, there's a saying that necessity is the mother of all invention.
Right.
And so when your kind of food is, you know, the food on the table is on the line and that's what you're focused on, you think about things very differently.
Right. So you did the startup, had the exit. The exit happened during school, or
it happened after. So after went to residency, was doing this thing all through residency, and then even started my first couple of jobs, my first job here back in Atlanta.
Yeah,
and then sold it.
Okay, so then you sold it, one thing off your plate. So then you were able to just work, and you were a doctor, right?
I was a doctor. Yep.
Practicing at Emory or somewhere else?
I was at Emory. Yeah. So I was at Emory University Hospital, and I was a hospitalist, which means if you get admitted to the hospital with the medical condition,
right,
we're the kind of doctors who come in and take care of you.
Okay. You know, it's funny. Somebody just recently said that word to me. I've never heard that word before. Hospitalist. So that means you work for the hospital and you don't have an outside practice.
That's exactly right. You work at the hospital. You may not work for the hospital, but you work at the hospital, and all you do is you take care of hospitalized patients. And it's been, it's probably one of the fastest growing specialties within medicine. So, you're typically, certified in what's called family medicine or internal medicine. So you're kind of a generalist.
Right.
But you focus on patients who have been hospitalized. And I think the nice thing about hospitalists is that they're very focused on systems. And so a big part of their identity and our identity is wrapped up in quality of care and systems improvement and systems-based care, which is how I've always thought and what I've gravitated to naturally.
Right. So, okay, so you're at Emory and then you get the bug to do something else. What's next after that?
Yeah, so I was at Emory and I was doing a combination of research, a lot of administrative work. So I was only doing maybe 20% of my time, actually, maybe even less, on clinical care.
Okay.
The rest of it was all this other stuff.
And so I'm assuming, based on that phrasing, your passion is with the clinical side, right? Or no?
I enjoy clinical medicine quite a bit, but it's in small doses.
Okay.
So I have a deep respect and humility for the people who do this 24/7. All the time.
But you don't like the paperwork, I'm assuming, then.
Oh, my gosh.
Then that's what that's the way I should have parsed that.
It's not just the paperwork. It's just it's a lot of beat down you get every single day. So
yeah. Just from like the admin side of like budgets and all that kind of craziness?
Yeah, there's a lot of administrative burden. There's a big regulatory burden.
It's, okay.
There's expectations that you have from patients, from families, from other staff. It's
right.
You're absorbing a lot of stress.
Yeah.
And you're helping make things better, and it's
right.
It's hard work. It's probably not different from being a parent.
Yeah.
When you're fully invested in your kid, and so it's
right.
It takes a lot out of you.
Yeah. You always want to make things better for the kid, right?
That's exactly right.
Just like for a patient. I never really thought about it that way. That's interesting. So you did that, and then what happened?
So then I got recruited to join this company called Apollo MD, which is a large multi-specialty group here in town.
Right.
So I had the opportunity to build out our hospital medicine business. So at the time they had, maybe one or two contracts, maybe 5-10 physicians. And so we had the opportunity to go in and really scale this thing up. And so I was there for almost 4 years. And grew that from, roughly zero physicians to, about 300 or so.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a pretty cool opportunity to go from zero to about $85 million in top line revenue over a 3-year period.
And those physicians were all here in the metro Atlanta area, or
all over the country.
Really?
So we had about 30 hospital customers all over the country, so as far west as Palm Springs.
Okay.
Actually, Coachella Valley, so kind of where the music festival is.
Yep.
All the way as far north as Richmond, Virginia.
Okay, wow. So I'm assuming you were doing a lot of traveling?
Oh, a ton.
A couple
of years of Diamond Medallion and,
It's funny. A lot of people talk about that as if they're proud of that.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I'm like, I don't want to ever have that again.
It's right? like it's like losing money on every unit of sales and trying to make it up on volume. it's just
because of the expense of travel and everything like that?
It's just the stress of travel. I mean, it's really hard work. And so, you get the status, but I'd still rather be home. I mean, that's...
Right. Well, and probably on top of that, your kids were young at that point still.
They were just born, really. So
So that's got to be tough. And you're not at Apollo anymore?
No, so I left back in February of this year.
Okay. February of last year now, right?
Oh, that's right.
We're
in
2018,
that's
right?
February,
you got to start writing 2018 on your checks and everything.
February 2017. Exactly right.
So coming up on a year. So what are you doing now?
So I work at a company called Radix Health. So, you know, when I was a hospitalist, one of the big problems we have is getting patients to see in follow-up to see doctors.
Uh-huh.
So imagine you're sick with something and you got to go see a specialist or maybe your primary care doc. And usually the workflow is we'll hand you a business card or piece of paper and say, hey, call this doctor, make an appointment.
Right.
And oftentimes the patients will come back to us and say, hey, doc, listen, I try to make an appointment with this doctor.
Right.
But there's nothing available. Not for the next 2-4 weeks. And
you
said follow up in 5 days. So at some point in my career, I got tired of that. I'd pick up the phone. I would call the doctor directly.
Okay.
And what was incredible is the doctor would almost always say, sure, not a problem. Bring them in.
Open up a slot.
Yeah. And it turns out that problem is very common. You know, the average wait time to see a physician in the U.S. is 24 days.
Wow.
In urban areas. But at any given day.
I'm assuming for a non-critical, non-acute type of thing, just like a, hey, I need to see the doctor.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. But what's incredible is that on any given day, anywhere from 10 to 30% of inventory goes unfilled. So 10 to 30% of slots go unfilled.
Those two things don't seem like they match up then.
It's this sort of this paradox that exists within healthcare. And it's because of a combination of how we – it's really a supply-demand problem at its core. And so it's a combination of how we think about inventory, how we allocate physician resources, how they divide up their time.
Yeah.
But also things like cancellations, problems load balancing, not showing up. All these things sort of add up, and you have this, you know, this massive problem.
So it sounds actually more like an informational problem than a supply-demand problem, right? The demand's there, the supply's there, they just don't know.
Supply-demand mismatch is probably the right way of saying it.
Okay.
So there is supply there, there is demand there,
right?
But the two things are not able to connect.
Right. And is it a lumpy problem? Is it like there's some doctors that, look, they're just busy all the time? Like there is no available supply there, but then there's others that have this kind of...
Very rarely.
Okay.
So even the busiest doctors are going to end up having some capacity that ends up going unused.
Okay.
And they often will, you know, sometimes doctors will kind of appreciate that because there is sort of this whiplash effect in the schedule where you're running behind.
And you can make it up then when you've got a gap.
You get a little bit of a break and you say, I can get all the paperwork done and everything else that needs to happen.
Yeah.
It's
funny.
From an actus perspective, it's a gap.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny because we always try to plan for doctors to go see them first thing in the morning because you're like, okay, there's no way they could be running behind. But I tell you what, running behind even when you're the first appointment of the day, I don't understand how that happens.
Yeah. Unfortunately, many doctors, the times they set to see patients are these arbitrary times. They say 30 minutes for a new patient, 15 minutes for an existing, 10 minutes for a post-op. You know, it's really arbitrary times. And so they haven't got to what we call evidence-based times, where you understand that this kind of patient with these conditions, this activity...
is going to take X amount of time.
Exactly.
Right.
And so it makes it very hard to optimize capacity.
So why is that? Why haven't they gone to some kind of dynamic, needs-based timing allocation?
It's hard. I mean, the technology part of the challenge has been the technology. So historically, doctors have maintained their schedules on a piece of paper.
Okay.
I mean, up until 15, 20 years ago, everyone had just it was an appointment book at the front desk, and you went in and you said, hey, Sanjay's going to show up at this date and time. Let me mark him down.
Right.
And then as you evolved and people started digitizing some of this work, you have pretty simplistic calendar-based systems for keeping up with inventory.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like – it's just like Outlook, you know. So you go in and you put in kind of a 10-minute slot or 15-minute slot.
Right.
And so it's hard, as an agent managing this process, it's hard to know, well, Dr. Park wants, he wants 15 minutes for this kind of patient, 18 minutes for this kind of patient, and 22 for that kind of patient, and this person's not going to show up, so let me put two people at the slot. And, it's a very hard problem.
I mean, because you think how many doctors we have in this country. I mean, if you're only looking at the U.S., and every single day that they're open, that's a whole new set of data that you could, I mean, it wouldn't take long to gather enough data, I got to imagine, to be able to do this and be able to have some kind of algorithm that figures this out, not just on a per doctor basis or per specialty basis, but also on the patient side. Like, patient X has a propensity of canceling one out of five times, so let's kind of double book or do whatever.
So that's exactly what we do. I mean, those are the kinds of things that we do.
Okay. So this is Radix. This is what you do. You do this analysis.
Sorry. We essentially solve that supply demand.
I was just trying to invent the thing that you already do.
great idea.
It's kind of awesome. So this is what you, so you go into the hospitals and you say, you know, like, hook us in and we'll help you figure out a better scheduling so we can maximize the time that your doctors are here.
Yeah. So we have a piece of software. It just sits in their practice management system, which is kind of does all this administrative work, including scheduling. And it's imagine kind of an intelligence analytics AI layer on top of that core engine. And so a scheduler or a patient goes in, they use our system in order to book an appointment.
Okay. So the company is based here in Atlanta?
It's based here in Atlanta. Yes. Okay. We got an office just down by the Beltline. So near Ponce City Market, Croc Market.
How big is the company? How many people?
So we've got, so we're divided up. So we've got 28 people total.
Okay.
18 are in India and then another 10 are here in the US.
So I'm assuming the India contingent is software development.
Partly software development, a lot of implementation, kind of business analyst work. So the software is, my co-founder is actually at a company here called Manhattan Associates, which you know. And so he was there for many years. And so a lot of what we do is Manhattan, but for healthcare.
Okay.
And so the software itself is highly, highly configurable. We spend a lot of time and energy understanding what our clients need, what those workflows look like, what the rules and preferences are, and then we configure that into the system. So a lot of that configuration work actually happens abroad.
Okay.
And we had the good fortune that one of my two co-founders is actually from India. And so when we started the company, he said, you know what, I'm going to move back to India, start up a wholly owned subsidiary there.
Right.
And so we were able to kind of bootstrap this thing and build it up from kind of ground up.
Yeah. Raised money, not raised money yet?
We raised an angel round early last year. Late in 2016, actually. We're looking at more of a Series A sometime in the next 6 to 9 months.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So what do you think? Is Atlanta a good town to be doing this kind of startup?
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. There's a ton of talent.
Right.
There is a number of large provider groups that you can begin to work with.
Yeah. It seems like Atlanta's a healthcare town, right? You got the CDC and then everything else around it.
Yeah, you've got a lot of health IT too. I mean, McKesson's here, Change is here, a ton of rev cycle stuff's here.
Yep.
So it's a good place.
So looking back, you're on startup number two, right? This is number two for you.
Yeah. I started a nonprofit very early. That was my first.
Oh, we left this out. Which nonprofit is that?
It's called HealthStat.
HealthStat. Yeah, I think I remember this. This was during college as well, right?
This is medical school. So early.
This is medical school. Okay.
So this was, essentially engaging students in policy advocacy.
Okay.
And so it's still around.
And that's still going?
It's still going.
Somebody else is running it, though.
Oh, yes. It was one of the smart things we did there was we pulled ourselves back from that really early in the process. And if you don't as a founder, you have this sort of this founder syndrome that emerges and it becomes very hard to extricate yourself in the future.
Becomes kind of a cult of the founder kind of thing. The personality of the founder is too much in there.
Yeah.
I've always said that too. For many years I did Startup Riot and I was always happy when people would come up to me and then not know that it was me. Even at the event, like I'm up on stage. How do you not know it's me? But that's fine. It's okay with that. And they don't know that I'm the one running it. There's one time where somebody saw a Startup Riot sticker on my laptop on a plane. And I was like, how are you involved with Startup Riot? Have you been to the events? I was like, I run it. I organize it. And they're like, okay. And I feel like that's a great thing because it becomes more about the event or the organization than it is about the one person.
Yes.
Although I think we have a lot of examples that run counter to that, right? Amazon with Bezos and Facebook with Zuckerberg. I don't know that there's a right answer necessarily, but I appreciate it. And it sounds like you appreciate it too with HealthStat, at least that's what it became.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. And I think that's why it probably has longevity, right? It's not tied to you.
Yeah.
So looking back at your career, what would you change? Anything that you feel like you would have done differently, done better? Spent less time in medical school or has that been the thing that has kind of empowered you to do all this other stuff?
Yeah, I feel like I've followed opportunities as they've come my way. And so I had a mentor once who looked at me and he said, Arun, this is you. And he drew me put a dot in a piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
And he said, this is what you should be doing. And he drew like four or five dots right around it, kind of in a circle.
Right.
And he said, this is what you're doing. And he drew dots all over the piece of paper.
Okay.
And he's like, you shouldn't be doing all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so I've kind of had the approach that you just do what you love and everything else sort of follows. And so I've been chasing opportunities as they come. Sometimes it feels a little bit disjointed. But at the end of the day, I feel pretty happy about what I've been able to do. And certainly, I feel like I'm at a pretty good spot in my career.
Yeah. So what's kind of like your master plan? You've got a startup that you're doing now. You've got Radix, right?
Yeah, Radix. Yeah.
But that'll be for a couple of years, right? You'll be there for, you know, we talk about these startups when we do them. You should plan for kind of 8 to 10 years.
Yes.
I think you still have a lot more in you, I hope, because I think we're roughly the same age. So
yeah.
I'm hoping that you have it because that means I have it in me too. But what's kind of the master plan? What's the big thing that's next?
Yeah, I mean, I've been interested in how you use technology and policy to make healthcare work better.
Yeah.
And so I'll kind of follow that mission to kind of where it takes me next.
Yeah. Do you think there's a solution for us here in the U.S.? We've kind of flip-flopped back and forth over the last couple of years from a policy side and, you know, with ACA and everything else like that. It just, I don't think we've solved it. Do you think there is a solution for us?
We've definitely not solved it. Let me officially say that on the podcast. But you know,
you heard it here first.
But yeah, I think there are a lot of really positive things that are happening.
Yeah,
that are sometimes very hard to put your finger on or to even like to see, and certainly aren't publicized.
Yeah,
but really interesting stuff happening around how we pay for healthcare, around the technology around healthcare, around the regulatory environment. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. Okay. What else? Anything else that you're like super excited about coming up in the future?
Let's see, Black Panther, pretty cool movie coming
out. Oh, yeah, that's it. I wasn't thinking that you'd go there, but yeah, man, that looks awesome, doesn't it?
It does look awesome.
Here's the one issue I've got, not with Black Panther specifically, but a lot of these Marvel movies, there are so many of them that I cannot keep
there
up.
Are.
And I feel like I've missed some of them in between. And so chronologically, I'm out of date. Like, I don't know. You know, they'll reference things in some of these new movies that have happened in others. I'm like, wait, have I seen that? I don't know if I've seen that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. And they're a little bit dark, frankly. I
mean, yeah.
I think, you know, I'm looking for maybe a little bit more, a less tortured hero.
Yeah, although I kind of like those. I don't know if you watch Daredevil on Netflix.
Yeah.
That was a great series.
Yeah.
I'm really looking for, I think they're coming out with a season 3. I think it's really well done.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. What else? Anything else you're looking forward to? What's 2018 have in store? Anything big that's exciting?
So, you know, it's just a lot of growth for Radix. So that's exciting. We just, we're working with our first health system customer now.
Yeah.
Big group up in New York. And so, you know, just a ton of growth and excited about what it'll be.
Yeah. What about for Atlanta?
Hopefully we'll get Amazon HQ here, right?
There you go. Well, we made the top 20 list.
And we, you know, if you look alphabetically, we're at the top.
Exactly. Starts with an A, Amazon. And you know, Apple apparently is going to start shopping for another headquarters too.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Apple starts with an A. Hey, Amazon starts with an A. Atlanta starts
here,
with an A.
You know?
We've got space wherever they want to go, right? that could be exciting. I think I've said from the beginning that the East Coast makes the most sense for Amazon, even if it's not Atlanta. I think they threw L.A. and some other place on the West Coast. I don't think that makes sense for them.
I think, I mean, all the criteria, this sort of fits. I mean, the one gap might be public transportation.
Yeah, well.
But, you know, in terms of talent, cost, logistics, access to the airport, I mean, partners, I mean, UPS
right.
is here.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I think it's.
So apparently, you know, our transportation was good enough because I just read a story that talked about how Detroit didn't make the list because they have no public transportation.
Yeah.
And we made the list. We got it. It's not the best, maybe.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I think it's pretty good. But when you compare it to like a city like Tokyo or New York or places like that, where, but then again, we're comparing a city of, we're what, 6 million people versus, you know, double our size, triple our size. It's maybe not a fair comparison.
Yeah.
Right. It is all exciting stuff, and we'll see where it goes. Leadership Atlanta, we both have gone through that. Anything there that you're excited about that's coming up?
There's a
couple of events coming up, I know.
There are, and I'm looking forward to nominating a few young people who are just incredible.
Yeah. What do you think about your time as in Leadership Atlanta?
I loved it. I mean, it was a nice opportunity to actually meet people completely outside of the domain I'm normally in, which is, you know, technology, healthcare.
Right.
And so, you know, talking with people who are doing really diverse things, but at the core are all motivated by the same passion to make the city a better place.
Yeah.
It was pretty powerful.
Do you do anything like that where you, like, intentionally try to get out of your bubble?
No, unfortunately, I don't.
Yeah. Do you think about that anytime? Do you worry about the fact that you're just too much in that healthcare bubble and maybe you need to do something outside?
No, I don't. But I do worry that I get too stuck in the day-to-day. And so, you know, increasingly what I'm doing is I'm spending very, you know, discrete time writing, thinking, focus on strategy.
Okay.
You know, so if you look at my calendar, you'll see, you know, from 6 to 7 every morning is like writing time. So
What time do you wake up?
Five.
Oh, man. You're killing me here. My co-host.
I'm asleep by like 9.
See, I'm up until 12, but like my co-host for my other podcast, he wakes up at 4:30, and I'm like, and he's got 5 kids.
Wow.
Just insane. But he's working in the morning because nobody else is up.
That's right. So I find it's pretty peaceful. You get a cup of coffee and you can just write, which is pretty cool.
Huh, that's good. So the writings that you do, is that for public consumption or is it just for yourself?
It's for public consumption. So it's a combination of, you know, op-eds, journal articles, stuff
nice.
For the website, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Do you have a blog somewhere that we can read more stuff, or is it just scattered and we got to hunt you down?
You got to hunt me down. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you were to search, you'd find, you know, a good number of journal articles, some op-eds, but it's hidden. And I think part of my New Year's resolution is to find more time to do that.
Okay.
Because it helps me clarify my thinking, and
yeah.
it's also, I think, you know, it helps me reflect.
Yeah. Cool. So if any of our listeners want to find you online, is there any place that they can find you?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me on Twitter, so at @Arun_Mohan, so @Arun_Mohan. You can find me at...
Mohan, in case
you
don't know how to spell that, too.
Yeah.
Where else can they find you?
You can find me at the Radix Health website, so, you know, feel free to email me at Radix Health.
Is that radixhealth.com?
That's right, so radixhealth.com.
Cool. Anywhere else they can find you?
That's
any
it.
Place you hang out?
No. Yeah, oh, well, you know, at home with the kids and in the park,
I don't think you want our listeners coming by to your house.
No, that's exactly right. At Frisbee, actually, Ultimate Frisbee. So, you know, Sunday afternoons, Grant Park.
Really?
So if you're an Ultimate player.
So how long have you been doing Ultimate Frisbee? I was about to wrap the show up, but now you've just opened up a whole new can of worms.
For years and years.
Really? What got you into that?
You know, went to college and a little liberal arts school, and they loved Frisbee up there. And so
What school?
Swarthmore College.
Swarthmore, yeah. And so you got into Ultimate then?
Ultimate, and it was terrible. I mean, I was the worst player on the club team at a Division III school.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it ever since. So you know, we play, you can Google this, but Grant Park Ultimate is the Google group.
Okay.
And we play every Wednesday.
It's just
Wednesday,
a pickup game?
Every Wednesday, Sunday. Not terribly competitive, but people get pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a lot of fun. Co-ed, so, you know, guys and gals both. And
I got to admit, I don't think I've ever played Ultimate.
Oh, you should come out.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's a great
I would be
workout.
Vying for your worst player and probably not even of the team of like the whole Southeast.
As long as you're willing to go out there and run and have a good time, you'll fit right in.
A brisk walk. Does a brisk walk work? Do a brisk walk. Okay, Arun, thanks for coming on the podcast. We appreciate it. I appreciate how many times our paths have crossed and looking forward to many more.
Ditto.